From NPR and the Futuro Media Group, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. This week, in a special archive edition of our show, an old friend of our program tells us how he got out of the lifestyle, the gangster lifestyle.
Drug dealers, stick-up kids, crackheads, the whole nine. A glance is reason enough to get jumped.
Then the life and death of Cesar Chavez and his memories of the United Farm Workers Movement.
We came to the conclusion that we had to involve half of the world to beat the growers.
And the queen of Tejano music, Selena.
The best part about being me, well, I guess just that, being myself. I don't have to pretend in front of anybody.
All this and more coming up on this special archive edition of Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Stay with us. It's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. As journalists, we can impact many people's lives. You, my dear listeners, you feel things as I speak into this microphone. And as you hear the many voices we put on our air, they change your hearts, maybe they change your minds. Maybe a radio show can, in fact, be life-altering. I know that one interview I did changed at least one man. I met John Guardo when I did a story about gangs in New York City for All Things Considered back in 1990. We stayed friends. In fact, he then became a contributor to Latino USA, sharing with us moments of his life as he attempted to separate from his gang. We've gathered several of John's commentaries. We start with a story from John talking about guns and violence in his Queens neighborhood in 1993.
Last night, I was speaking to my girl on the phone, telling her how bad things were getting around my block, and that I decided to buy a gun. She got mad, raising her voice and asking me, "How could you be that ignorant? You know what would happen if you got caught with one." I said to her, "Yo, I ain't gonna be carrying it around and showing it off." She got quiet then. And while searching for a better answer, I realized what a vicious cycle I was willingly getting into. You see, around my neighborhood, things ain't no joke. I'm a former gang member, so I know what dangers roam the streets. Drug dealers, stick-up kids, crackheads, the whole nine. A glance is reason enough to get jumped. Having outgrown that lifestyle, though, I'm trying to live a regular life. Working and going to school. Unfortunately, that also means my family's been taken off the untouchables list. Under this new set of rules, what am I to do with this trouble? Call the cops? No one I know, including myself, would do that in case of an emergency. In my eyes, cops are more interested in filling their quota than in serving the community. Dialing 911 has simply become taboo. At this point, I'm sandwiched between two problems. Number one, I don't trust the police. The only times they've been there for me was to ram flashlights into my skull while cursing me out. If not that, they've stopped me in front of my building to frisk me as my neighbors watch. Number two, if I remain vulnerable for too long, something bad may happen to my loved ones. What can I do? I can't join a crew. I just renounced one. But I gotta protect myself. So the only thing left for me is to get a gun. Or is it? You see, I really believe if the cops got their act together, there wouldn't be so much static in the streets. It doesn't matter if there's cops in every corner when they're gonna be there to magnify the distrust we already have for them. Policemen should figure out who the real criminals are. I know. And go after them. Instead of treating all of us like such. They're the ones who have to change, since the problems of the street are always going to be there. There's always going to be crime, and we need protection. These issues may be the bigger picture, but I'm still unable to answer my girl. What worries me is that it might be one of my friends who falls into the cycle and goes out to buy the 9. In street slang, that's a 9mm handgun. I'm John Guardo, speaking for the street.
When John Guardo's commentaries first ran on Latino USA in 1993, many listeners had strong reactions. He was too raw, too real, too honest about gangs, violence, poverty, guns, and drugs, which he took on in this essay. By the way, the end of this piece will take your breath away, and it comes rather quickly, so pay attention.
Friday night, I was hanging with my boys. We were chilling at this guy Chino's house, drinking 40s while he took care of his kid. I hadn't hung out in a while, so I didn't mind babysitting, but the rest of the guys seemed restless. When I finally asked what was up, they told me that they were expecting a delivery of skis, also known as cocaine. It's hard for me to admit how much drugs have become a part of my life, but they have, and in a big way. The lyrics and the music I hear speak of drugs as a way to become popular, or even rich. That idea is reinforced by how drugs are glamorized in the movies. Bad guys living large, selling cocaine, with women around them, and money to burn. Walking home from school, I saw that crime did pay. Just like in the movies, the neighborhood dealers had cars, girls, money, and respect. Things I wanted. Time passed by, though, and a pattern became visible. I watched yesterday's big shot dealers become the day's victim. Whether they got shot or went to jail, it was always constant. I saw those who came around to buy drugs deteriorate, transforming from regular people to beggars and criminals with each purchase. Even if you ain't got nothing to do with drugs, you can still be mugged by a crackhead or catch a bullet from a dealer's gun. People either sell or do drugs because they don't realize what harm they're inflicting on themselves or others. Anyway, that Friday, as my friends got high, I chose to ignore what they were doing, numbing myself to their actions. I felt compelled to talk to them, but was afraid they'd start dissing me. Feeling out of place, I went home, got to bed, and fell asleep with a bad feeling. The next day, I woke up to a phone call. One of the guys I was with the night before had OD'd on cocaine and died of a heart attack. He was 21 years old and also my friend. I'm John Guardo, speaking for the street.
One of the challenges of covering news is illustrating the real-life impact of policies that might feel distant. For example, immigration is, for many people, an abstract concept. But for John Guardo, who came to the U.S. from Colombia as a child, the issue is personal. In this next essay, John tells us about coming to this country and how he adapted.
Yo, you want to know what really burns me up? It's when I hear people talk about minorities and immigrants like we are subhuman. It's those same people who think it's our fault when bad things happen in our neighborhoods. What they don't realize is that our communities are the ones abandoned by the authorities and left to decay. To set the record straight, let me tell you a story. There once was a kid, a smart kid, who came to this country not to freeload or abuse the opportunities America had to offer, but for a more basic reason, to live with his mom. Pops was an alcoholic who had made a habit out of beating up mom. Mom was a teenager who, after the separation, moved to the U.S., leaving the kid behind, sacrificing it all for a shot at a better life. Finally, time allowed for mother and son to reunite in New York City. This story should have ended with them living happily ever after. Unfortunately, this is the real world, and it didn't happen that way. I am that kid. When I put my foot on the plane, I knew it was the start of a new life. I looked forward to visiting Disneyland and the Empire State Building. I had a lot of aspirations. Catching a glimpse of the Statue of Liberty just before landing gave me confidence. It reassured me that I was finally free from the family violence I'd left back home. But had I really escaped violence entirely? For the first few weeks, After I came to this country, life was good. Living in postcard New York was how I thought it would be. That all ended when my mom ran out of places to take me and I had to face it all on my own. Armed with only intellect and friendliness, I stepped into society only to face a seemingly indestructible enemy, prejudice. Being nice didn't keep me from getting beat up. Being smart didn't mean anything if no one would listen. But being punched for not knowing English, that was the last straw. From then on, respect became more important than anything, and the streets became my school. My mother, on the other hand, worked incessantly, pushed to exhaustion by a dream of seeing her son wear a graduation gown. Sometimes I felt like telling her how many obstacles I was facing as a new immigrant, and just because of being myself. But that would have disillusioned her, and she didn't deserve that. When I turned 15, I joined the gang. It seemed like the only way out of my situation. It was like a passport to a regular life, free from being pursued by a hate I didn't understand. With size came strength, and all our voices fused into one that was heard and respected. Now, through violence, I had earned the right to be. Being young at the time, though, I was more inclined to the social aspects of gang life. Being with girls, drinking with the guys, and wilding. Walking down that path landed me in jail a couple of times, turning me into a stereotype, just another statistic. I admit that my sense of responsibility decreased by being in the gang. Instead of hanging out, I could have been studying, but that lost time was replaced by a sense of security. The acceptance given to me by my crew filled up the hole created by being rejected during my first months here. Belonging to a gang fulfilled me, but as time passed, I realized this wasn't the way either. Now that I've been here for almost 10 years, I look at other young kids who have just arrived to this country and see myself. It's a shame that a person whose only intention is to come here and do better is welcomed by prejudice, greed, and racism. This country was built on immigration. Why is it then that some people claim to have more rights than others? Is it a seniority thing or a freedom thing? You see, I believe if there was some sort of structure or orientation to guide immigrants when they arrive here, those who are new to this country would be able to avoid certain obstacles, like the ones I had to confront. A good start would be an expansion in the English as a Second Language program, to make it available to everybody, students and adults alike. Not knowing how to speak English is a problem that leads to others, like difficulty in finding a job or being a target for discrimination. America is a beautiful country, full of promise and opportunity for everyone, immigrants included. Too bad there are those out there who tarnish its beauty with ignorance. I'm John Guardo, speaking for the street.
The words of John Guardo, who will be rejoining Latino USA as a commentator as we expand to our new one-hour format. And coming up on Latino USA, remembering the queen of Tejano music, Selena.
She just knew how to communicate and how, with her music, to reach those hearts. She was pure beauty. She was our heritage. She was Hispanic. She was hope.
Memories of Selena, coming up. No se vayan.
Cada día es mucho mejor. En tu compañía no hay ninguna decepción. No sé cuánto de esto es amor, porque estoy entregado, todo está reservado a mi comodidad.
It's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa, and welcome back to our special archives edition of our program. So, recently, the Latino USA team has had to listen closely to the history our program has documented over the last two decades, taking the time to listen to hundreds of minutes of tape. So, one highlight our producers found moving was of our coverage of the death of the co-founder of the United Farm Workers Union, Cesar Chavez. He died in 1993, the year our program debuted on the air.
We shall miss Cesar's powerful voice. It is an honor to remember his valiant life as we go forward to try to bring for our children and our children's children the vision and the dream that we shared.
Repeat after me, boycott grapes! Boycott grapes! Boycott grapes!
What has happened to Cesar will happen to all of us. And may we all be as lucky as Cesar and be able to lay our heads down, close our eyes, while reading a magazine on the Aztec Nation, and go to sleep and end our lives in that manner. We should all be that lucky.
Nosotros venceremos ahora.
Welcome this evening, Cesar Chavez of the United Farm Workers of America.
Very early in our struggle, we found that we really couldn't beat the growers at their own game. And taking a page from Gandhi and Dr. King, we came to the conclusion that we had to involve half of the world to beat the growers. And I'm talking now of public action or the boycott. It is the only way we've ever made any progress through the boycott. The boycott or a threat of the boycott. It's a terrible irony that in our day, in our age, our country produces more food than what it really needs. Yet the men, women, and children whose labor harvests this food often go to bed hungry. And we ask you to join us to put a stop to that. Thank you very much.
The Latino community has lost not just leaders like Cesar Chavez. Cultural icons have passed away as well over these last two decades. One of them was the queen of Tejano music, Selena Quintanilla Perez, who died at just 23 years old. Here's a remembrance which aired shortly after her death in 1995.
Selena y los Dinos!
She was the undisputed queen of Tejano music. At age 23, Selena Quintanilla Perez had a polished stage presence, already honed by many years of experience, going back to the time she first began singing at her father's restaurant in Corpus Christi.
It wasn't an overnight success type of thing, but we're really, really happy to be here and just be considered one of the top. You know, people consider us that way, naturally, it's a compliment.
Mainstream media may have called her the Hispanic Madonna, but the only real comparison was her stage wardrobe. Selena often wore glittery bustiers on stage, but it was a wholesome, clean sensuality that she projected, as well as a down-home sincerity and a love of family.
Men were crazy about her, and women couldn't be jealous about her. They envied her. They wanted her. They thought, now that's what I want to be. That's what I want to look like. That's how I want to express myself.
We partied every weekend with her. I mean, we just got together every Friday night, Saturday night, and we had Selena on.
It was a family thing.
She just knew how to communicate and how, with her music, to reach those hearts.
She was pure beauty. She was our heritage. She was Hispanic. She was hope. She was going to do it for all of us.
and now she's a lost. We loved her. We just loved her so much. But the legend will live. She will live forever.
Fotos y recuerdos.
Selena will live forever in her recordings, her Grammy Award-winning Selena Live, her recent Amor Prohibido, and about a dozen other albums were hot sellers before her death. Now record stores can't keep her CDs in stock.
Everything is sold out. Even San Antonio, we call San Antonio, we call Houston. Nobody has nothing. North Daniel Records, I've called. We have people calling from Puerto Rico, calling from everywhere.
Tejano record stores like Maldonado's in Austin, Texas, became community gathering spots for her fans in the days after Selena's murder, places to hear her music, and to wonder at the senselessness of her death, and about the future of Tejano music without its queen.
I think she really would have made all the Hispanics in the world happy, made them proud to be Hispanics. But now she's singing with the good Lord, and we let her rest in peace. That's the best we can do for her.
No me queda más que perderme en un abismo de tristeza y lágrimas. No me queda más.
Selena's single, No Me Queda Más, is at the top of Billboard's Latin chart, and a recording with Mexican singer Graciela Beltran was released the day after her funeral.
No me queda más. What's the best part about being Selena?
The best part about being me? Well, I guess just that, being myself. I don't have to pretend in front of anybody.
For Latino USA, with Elena Quesada, I'm Maria Martin.
Es el más dulce recuerdo de mi vida. Yo tenía una esperanza en el fondo de mi alma, que un día te quedaras tú conmigo.
And for this week, that's Latino USA. Become our amigos. You can friend us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. We're also on Tumblr, so find us. Our program is produced by Carolina Gonzalez, AC Valdez, Lita Hartman, Daisy Rosario, Diana Montaño, Brenda Salinas, Miguel Simon Johnson, and Michael Jones. Latino USA is produced by The Futuro Media Group in Harlem. Our program was founded at the University of Texas at Austin. I'm executive producer Maria Hinojosa. Join me again next week for another edition of NPR's Latino USA.
Latino USA is made possible in part by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation and by the Marguerite Casey Foundation, dedicated to achieving a more just and equitable society for all, and the Ford Foundation, dedicated to working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Lumber Liquidators, hardwood, bamboo, and cork flooring for the home handyman or building professional. More at lumberliquidators.com. And the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. And the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to a vigorous presence for poetry in American culture. Poetryfoundation.org. This is NPR.